Timmies and Spikes, we must all arrive at the win condition.
I think it's a very interesting time for Wizards to step up and wear it.
Standard fish is a thing? I don't know. Maybe I don't want to play.
That's everything you want out of a Planeswalker.
I find that the uncommons are more flavorful than the rares.
Hello again, and welcome back to the Win Condition Podcast, your source for lore, news, and brews in the Magic the Gathering community. My name is Sean, I'm your host. I'm joined by my co-host, Greg. How's it going, Greg?
Doing okay today.
And here we are, just 1 week away from the release of Masters 25, but the focus has kind of shifted. Funny how that happens more often than not when a Masters set is about to come out, and we'll talk about that later. But first, we wanted to remind you that this show is brought to you by Flipside Gaming. Head to flipsidegaming.com and order any single, sealed product, many various games of any nature. And any order over $10, use that promo code WINCONDITION in all caps and save yourself 10% off of your purchase, which will help contribute to future show giveaways. And we'll remind you about our giveaway at the end of this episode, so stay tuned. It's going to be a good one. But before we get too carried away, Greg, how has your week been? What you been up to?
Sadly, not playing Magic. I got a couple games in today.
Oh, really?
But I lost to Artifact Karn EDH.
Ooh. Well, hey, at least it's Karn, who we'll be seeing again really soon. That's kind of exciting.
That is kind of exciting.
Gosh. Yep, and my week again, sadly, no Magic, just tons and tons of work. We had our fleet audit on Tuesday. I worked from 5 a.m. until 6:30 p.m. on Monday. It was kind of rough, but we passed, so hey, there we go.
Passing things is good.
Exactly. Well, Greg, we have a very interesting character to go over the story of this week. So without further ado, why don't we head into Lore Corner?
I think we can describe that.
Well, last week we brought you the story of Jaya Ballard, who is going to appear in Dominaria. This week, we are covering a character that we weren't sure if we were going to see. However, due to recent events, it is confirmed that Joda, the Archmage, will be present in Dominaria. So we're going to go ahead and take a while today and go over the history of Joda. So,
Before we jump into this, I just wanted to talk quickly. So yesterday morning, that would be Thursday, I know this was funny to me. I was talking to you about what we should talk about.
Yes.
And I thought we should talk about Joda, because Jaya and Joda, they're kind of the base of most of the Dominarian story after we get out of the Brothers' War.
Their stories do cross quite a bit, yes.
And I thought it would be the perfect one to jump into, being the fact I just had a good feeling. Then last night, that leak came out of China. Wizards did their damage control.
And we'll definitely talk about that later on in the episode.
And then we got that leak.
Yeah.
And it was all the funniness, because I was just, it made me laugh so much inside.
Yeah, and I was like, well, where should we go over Nicol Bolas, who's a known commodity? Should we go over Tezzeret? Should we go over Ral Zarek? You know, all of these characters I thought were going to be a little more relevant than Joda. However, we stumbled upon something great here. And he's a very, very interesting character and looks to be quite a big part of Dominaria, both past and present and future. So,
but it's kind of funny. He only has now two cards.
Yeah, he was pretty absent in terms of art and representation in the cards. But I think that's going to change here moving forward. So anyway, just real brief history. We'll start out by saying that Jota was a powerful archmage during Dominaria's Dark Age and Ice Age, represented by the Dark. And, you guessed it, Ice Age. And he was present for many of the important historical events on Terracere during the periods.
Terracear,
thank you.
I can only imagine.
And he was very influential during the Ice Age in developing and researching the aspects of colored magic on Dominaria. He was also a major contributor to the returning of the Shard to the rest of the multiverse. And if you were present for Shards of Alara, you know that the five great shards make up the five three-color combinations of neighboring colors in the color pie.
I don't think that's the shard they're talking about.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because he's never been a planeswalker.
No. Well, they could be referring to...
I think it has something to do with the mending and how the universe was split.
Well, he definitely was pre-mending. So...
Yeah.
But as you will find out later in the story, he has been around quite some time and will probably be around for a long time to follow.
As long as he doesn't die.
Yes. Yeah. All right. Well, do you want to kick us off here, Greg?
Yeah. So we're going to start in the Gathering Dark. So this is before the Ice Age. Jota was born in 413 AR, which I think that is after the Brothers' War, is what they're considering AR. I'm not sure. Several generations after the Silex Blast that ended that Brothers' War.
It stands for Argivian Reckoning. It sets year zero as the year in which both Urza and Mishra were born. And that began 0 AR.
Okay. So it's actually not that far after the Brothers' War.
Right.
He is actually a direct blood relation to both Urza and Mishra.
Wait, what? Descendants
of the
brothers.
So they were a wealthy family. Yeah. So obviously he's a strong, powerful mage, even without training. So after the war, they were still farm landowners in the Giva province, also known as Argive. But everything started to get worse. They weren't making any... Their money was getting worse. So then he left the estate as a young man. He apprenticed under the wandering mage Voska, which is where he got the magical mirror that was important for later in his life. Captured by the Church of Tau, which was a dominant religious institution, found that magic was evil. Jota escaped and wandered the region for a while, trying to reunite with Voska. During the travels, he hid from groups of goblins by submerging himself in a long-abandoned fountain.
Could this be, as you mentioned earlier, the Fountain of Youth?
It could be. The magical waters of the fountain slowed down his aging to a crawl, although it would be years before anybody noticed.
Right, and there was that card from the Dark originally, Fountain of Youth, so hey.
Yep. So it was totally there. Jota then learns that Voska was killed by the Church, so it's not like he was going to find them again. Traveled with another mage named Seema to the City of Shadows. Captured by a merfolk, traded to the Ragman in exchange for the Coral Helm.
You get traded to somebody for an artifact. That's pretty low.
Took safe haven in the Conclave of Mages. Another magic card. Confused by these events, but happy to found a fellow group of mages that would teach him, Jota succeeded in the test that Maricel, the ruler of the Conclave, had set for him, and enrolled with them. You remember Maricel, right?
Yeah, I had no idea that he ruled the Conclave of Mages. That's some deep history there. I'm always impressed at Wizards' ability to print cards in recent sets that harken way back to early on in Magic's history. So it's
really cool.
That's pretty sweet.
That's why I like this, like, third-party products, because they're able to do that.
Yeah.
Well, not third-party, but non-standard sets and whatnot.
Right.
So after this, there was a plot to have a full assault on the Church of Tau that was interrupted. Seema had tracked him down after his kidnapping. Jota was led to Ith's prison, you know, Maze of Ith, by the Ragman, freed by the old mage, only to see Ith, who had been driven insane by the pit. If you know what the pit is, it is the Eternal Pit. It dives deep into nothingness. And dealing with that type of stuff put him into a murderous rage that killed Marisil and the Ragman. Jota then uses the mirror to make Ith come to his senses. Defeating the church, the conclave was in ruins, and Ith decided to travel the land instead of rebuild. Jota and Seema went back to the City of Shadows.
So, he got his mirror. You see the inclusion of the Ragman, obviously another card from the dark. And the death of Marisil. I mean, that's the last we're going to see of him, right? Or is it?
Dun, dun, dun.
So, we continue on through the Ice Age next. So, Jota thrived in the City of Shadows, eventually becoming the Archmage and marrying Seema. However, the fountain he bathed in had dramatically slowed his aging, so while those around him died, he remained practically unchanged. Again, we hearken back to Joira, who drank water from the slow time bubble, so a lot of these characters that we're going to see here in Dominaria have been around for many, many years, but have not aged. How convenient.
It is very convenient.
Yeah. So the grief and despair that mounted from him constantly living while seeing others around him die caused Jota to descend into a state of madness. To retain his sanity, he began to store his memories within his mirror, wipe his memory clean, Jace, anybody? Then restore the memories from the mirror, drained of their emotional attachment. That seems pretty complex, but I guess effective enough to keep him going. He lived so long that he was granted the title of Archmage Eternal and oversaw the City of Shadows as it changed into the School of the Unseen. Over 2,000 years into the Ice Age that fell over Dominaria, Jota was kidnapped by the cousins Gerda Aegis' daughter, his second-in-command at the school, and Gusta Ebba's daughter, the royal mage of Kjeldor. This is a pronunciation task here. Who were envious.
You need some help there?
Yeah, no, I think I'll be all right. Well, we'll see. Who were envious of his power. They gave him to the necromancer Limdul. God, he gets traded from the Ragman. Now he gets traded by the Ebba's daughter, to Limdul, who we know is a downright nasty. Limdul, who muddled in Jota's brain with Finhorn pollen, tricked him into believing he was a summoned creature and forced him to research magic for him, specifically for information about Chandelar and on ways to defeat planeswalkers.
Wait, I got a question. Yeah. What's this about summoned creatures?
Well, Greg, you mentioned earlier in the previous episode about Jaya that pre-mending, long, long time ago, these planeswalkers would summon creatures from other planes to fight for them, and, you know, in the end of their indentured servitude, if you will, would be forced to return to their original plane. So
that's right.
He could be under the guise of, well, I'm not going to be here forever, so, you know, might as well just do whatever he's telling me to do, because then I'm going to leave. So Jota was saved from Limdul by Jaya Ballard, a former apprentice who never got very far in the wizarding world. Aww.
She just liked too much fire, right?
Yeah, right. Burn it. Burn it all. However, Jota had been kidnapped shortly before his regular memory cleansing ritual. Thus, without the pollen clearing his mind, Jota was going insane. I think that was supposed to be without the mirror clearing his mind, Jota was going insane.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Jaya called upon the so-called goddess Freyalis to cure him with her amulet that was gifted to her early in her life, placing them both in a position of debt towards the elven planeswalker.
Which is where she wanted the mirror, right?
Exactly. She wanted the mirror for her services, but I think Jaya said yes, even though she couldn't really come clean on her promise. So,
but I think it comes to it that after Jota agrees at a later date.
Yeah. So, having discovered the extent of Limdul's plans, Jota took Jaya to Keld to convince the ruling elite of the danger. This was not easy, as many Kjeldarins believed that the Necromancer was no threat, or that he was even a possible ally against the Baltuvian barbarians, the very people whom went from being rare and are now common in M25. No, I'm just kidding. The very people whom Jota wanted the Kjeldarins to ally themselves. But Limdul overplayed his hand. He had the secret organization called the Knights of Stromgald stage a coup. Thanks to the timely intervention of Jota, Jaya, Gusta, and Varchild, the coup failed, but the threat convinced King Darien of the truth in Jota's warnings.
Wait, isn't that the dude that makes armies by taking damage?
It is. It is. Darien is going to be in M25, originally from Cold Snap. So he makes a great commander, by the way.
He really does. Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
Look it up, kids. the next spring, the conflict came to a head in a climactic battle between Limdul's undead hordes and the Kjeldarin-Balduvian alliance. During this battle, Jota dueled with Limdul himself, who revealed that he was actually a merger between Limdul, a former Kjeldarin soldier, and Mersil. He's back!
What?
Who had placed his essence into his ruby ring, which had been found by the soldier. Jota was robbed of his chance for vengeance, however, because Leshrac intervened. The Planeswalker, who was the source behind much of Limdul's powers, was displeased by how the Necromancer had wasted his armies on Kjeld, and he had wanted him to use them on Chandelar. After cutting off Dul's hand, severing his link with Mersil, Leshrac took him to Phyrexia to be recreated. And in the aftermath of this battle, Jota was summoned by Freylis, who demanded to borrow his mirror as payment for his debt. Here we go. After the mirror was used in the world spell that ended the Ice Age, Freylis returned it, but Jota felt she had somehow altered it. From that moment on, he did not dare use it again. And if you listened to our previous episode, you may know what she did to it, but we're going to continue, and you'll find out anyway.
So going into the next book, Shattered Alliances, 20 years later, Jota is once again visited by Jaya, showing him a shriveled, severed hand. The hand of Limdul. The ring finger was missing. Fearing that the ring contained Mersil, Dul's essence, and could thus take over a powerful lord or wizard and wreak destruction, the reunited duo set out to find it. During their travels, Jota learns that Jaya had changed in the years that they have been apart. On the travels, Jota once again forged an alliance between Kajor and Balduvia, this time against the forces of their dear friend Varchild, a now renegade with anti-Balduvian sympathies herself. The alliance would eventually be sealed by a dynastic merger via the marriage between Lothar Lovason of Balduvia and Alexandria of Keld. Is that possibly the previous bloodline to the Luisa Cold Eyes?
It could be. It could be.
I don't know. This marked the beginning of New Argive. The trail then eventually led to Soldev and the Adnates there. During an audience with the Adnates, Jota discovered that they had access to the Phyrexian war beasts that had been excavated there. Moments after the discovery, Jaya stabs Jota fatally, revealing that she had been the new vessel for Mersil Dul all along.
Not Jaya!
Right? The Adnates then use the blood of Jota, the closest still-living relative of Urza, the arch-enemy of Phyrexia, to activate the war beasts who went on to take over the Soldevi steam beasts that had been modeled out then. They leveled Soldev and then teleported to the School of the Unseen, destroying that as well. Talk about destruction. With no other options left, Jota uses his mirror and was able to amplify his faltering magic and heal himself, and also discovered what Freylis had done to it.
She had
felt that someone near her had the Planeswalker's spark and believed it to be Jota. Annoyed by Jota's irreverent attitude towards Planeswalkers, she had enchanted the mirror to trigger the spark of anyone using it. But Jota was certain that he did not possess the spark, and narrowly managed to escape the spell. faced with an immensely powerful Jaya dual Marisil, Jota realized that every time he had met Fraley's, someone else had been there. Jaya. After an intense duel, Jota was in the right position and smashed his mirror in Jaya's face. The energy of Fraley's spell was released, burning away the essences of Marisil and Lim Duel and triggering her spark.
That's quite a partner commander combination. Jaya, Lim Duel, Marisil.
That is. Ah, gosh. What were those? I mean, they're all in the same colors.
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, one is wearing the ring with the essence of the other two. That, oh my gosh, that's power right there.
Jeez, yeah. So after ascending as a planeswalker, Jaya helps Jota defeat the beast that destroys the school of the unseen. Jota then decided, like it's before him, that seclusion of the school had not been the right way and opted not to rebuild. With the surviving mages traveling to other continents and Jaya setting out across the plains, Jota opted to spread rumors and lies about himself in order to hide behind myth and legend.
So Jota kind of self-imposes fading off into the mist, kind of trying to lay low here.
Yeah.
He's like, all right, this has been pretty messed up. I'm just going to kind of chill and recoup here for a second. I mean, dealing with his madness and his mirror that is now broken. He's got a lot to contemplate and think about here. You know, not to mention that he's like thousands of years old by this point. After he had disappeared, Jota had made several appearances. 300 years after the destruction of the School of the Unseen, Jota visited Urza Planeswalker, who had returned to Dominaria. Urza wanted to fight the Phyrexians and their coming invasion, but was completely insane. Jota talked to him, telling him what had happened to the plane in his absence, and played an important role in restoring Urza to sanity. During the Phyrexian invasion, Jota was not seen, but was mentioned as still being alive. I mean, looks like the School of the Unseen has paid off to him, yeah?
Right, yeah.
He eventually returned during the events of Planar Chaos, somehow probably by scrying. He had discovered that Joyra would arrive at Urborg and waited for her there. When they met, he offered to help her in her quest to stop the further deterioration of Dominaria's space-time continuum. I mean, that was kind of a problem.
Yeah.
He had created a new mirror that was a perfect copy of the one he had gotten from Voska almost 4,000 years earlier. He eventually gave this mirror to Fraelis, hoping she could use it to heal the world like she had done before. But Fraelis discarded the item, claiming it couldn't do the job. Although he did not join her for the entire quest, there were definite sparks between Jota and the fellow immortal human Joyra. After all the troubles were over and the time of mending had begun, Joyra sought Jota out. Joyra told him that he was a different man from the Jota she had read about, which Jota confirmed. Whether this means that Jota that appeared in Planar Chaos is a different Jota, possibly from another timeline, or simply that the stories about Jota had painted a different image about him was left unexplained.
So much.
You know, while we have a character like Jaya, where her very early childhood is shrouded in mystery, it seems like Jota's later life is shrouded in mystery.
But it really is.
Hopefully, you know, coming up here in Dominaria, we will have some light shed on his recent past, as well as what his plans are, and how this is all going to tie together with Bolas's fiendish plan of, you know, planar domination.
I know, right? Jeez, I can't believe what that guy's doing.
Yeah, so that brings us to the end of the background lore and story of Jota. Very compelling character. And we're going to be seeing a card of his, a legendary creature card in Dominaria, that is pretty exciting.
It is.
So anyway, Greg, you'd mentioned earlier that there was a bit of a slip up. There was a pretty huge leak that had happened in regards to Dominaria. So why don't we tackle this in As Foretold?
So, I don't know if you've been online today, being Friday the 9th, but we have, because, you know, we do that thing. Anyhow, last night on Thursday the 8th, on a China message board that is frequently used by Magic players, a very large text file showed up in Chinese. And most people don't pay that much attention to it, but anyhow, somebody saw it, they've looked into it, and found out that it is the release notes for Dominaria. So once they found that out, of course, everybody's like, these people are like, I need to find somebody to translate it. They found a translator, they translated the entire document, and posted it on Reddit. A couple hours later, Wizards, of course, finds out, because they're on all media, and they issue a statement saying, well, it happened. Somebody found out about us. This wasn't supposed to happen this early. We're going to be talking about things next week. But since it's out there, we need to give you the entirety of the release notes so that way it's not hidden information or hard to see. So they posted the release notes in every language they had available. And now a bunch of the spoiler sites and whatnot have posted these cards with mock-ups and what they kind of are. And, well, we wanted to talk about these cards today.
Yeah. Blake Rasmussen wrote the article released to everybody kind of explaining what was going on. And one of the more interesting bullet points he threw up on here was they have a super secret project associated with Dominaria that involves a fun new way to play Magic. We had already planned to talk about it, but now we can talk about it using Dominaria cards as an example, so we'll call that a silver lining. So, a fun new way to play Magic. That's kind of exciting. I mean, I have no idea what we could be in store for, but the hits just keep on coming with the announcement of the two-headed giant product. I mean, they recently reprinted Arch Enemy. We've got Plane Chase.
The International Planeswalker series.
Yes. There's no shortage of fun ways to enjoy this game, and they just keep on coming with more hits and more hits. So while a lot of people view this leak as a negative, and it is, you know, sad, in fact, there's been quite a few, like, let's take Iconic Masters, for example. That was kind of rolled out in a very awkward manner. And right before it was released, there was a huge shift in attention towards Unstable, which a lot of people were rather unhappy about. And so before we dive too deep into this, Greg, I wanted to ask you a question. With Masters 25 releasing next Friday, I've read a couple of things that say the supply for stores is actually less than they had anticipated. And, you know, we're hearing that, I mean, I know I was calling some stores thinking I was going to be able to pre-order a box even just this week. And they were saying that, you know, they were, you know, trying to contact their distributor to see if they could get more product. So I'm not 100% sure if that was a problem with Iconic Masters, but that definitely seems to be a problem when you've got people chomping at the bit to buy, you know, M25, a premium Masters product. And I don't know, I mean, call me crazy, but I think that the convenient leaking of this information, I mean, Dominaria is what, less than, or about a month away, maybe a little over
about
a month. And
we're looking at the last week of April, so we're a month and a half away.
Right. And I mean, you got a lot of people upset about the quote unquote EV or estimated value of M25. You've got a shortened supply run from what I'm seeing from LGSs and their distributors. I mean, M25 is definitely coming with its, you know, bumps in the road.
It's got a lot of bumps in the road because there's a lot of cards that are being printed in it that are not, they're not as good value, or they're not as they're really unexpected.
Right.
They weren't cards that were worth reprinting, or they didn't feel like they had a spot there. There's other cards that would have been better choices. Not necessarily it would have been in the same colors or what it could have been, but it just didn't work. And then whether those cards were just too good for a draft format, or why they chose not to reprint them, it really hurt the set. Now, you had a question you wanted to ask me. What was your question?
Well, I'm sorry. You kind of triggered another point that I was thinking about, and that is, you know, talking about the value of this set. Like, the cards that are in this set, they a lot of them are whatchamacallit. They're very rare in terms of availability, and except I mean they're not as much, you know, sought after in terms of playability. I mean, you do have a couple. I mean, you've got your Jaces, you got your Chalice of the Void, you got your Ensnaring Bridge, you got your Street Wraiths, you've got your Simeon Spirit Guides. You do have a lot of
Relentless
cards that are,
Rats, even.
Yes. You have a couple cards that are actually quite playable and sought after. But cards like, you know, Imperial Recruiter,
Tree of Redemption.
That's not actually in this category, but there's a bunch of cards that are printed because they're valuable merely because they're hard to find.
Right.
And they're just very rare in terms of supply. So I don't know. I mean, there's a lot of people talking about prices of this set, you know, single prices crashing over time. There just seems to be a lot of doom and gloom over a set that's supposed to be a celebration set of, you know, 25 years of Magic. And whether those claims are valid or not, it's definitely stirring up quite a bit of controversy. And my whole point is this information about Dominaria comes at a very interesting time, you know? And
wait, are you going to ask me if you feel like this was a appropriate leak come out by Wizards just to keep the hype train rolling and the attention off of them for something being a poor release?
I think it's a very interesting time for Wizards to step up and wear it, essentially, and say, hey, you know what? This person or somebody did something wrong. We're here to clean up this mess. You know, we're going to show you guys that we mean business. Here's what we really are doing. And we're going to do you guys a favor by pulling back the curtain and showing you what's coming out in a little over a month. Well, hey, guess what? You've got a master set coming out in a week. And now all everybody can talk about is the stupid Dominaria leaks. So
yeah,
we see a shift in attention, you know, very rapidly from an amazing product that people are poo-pooing to something that's very controversial, and you know people just are, it's so polarized. You got, you know, half the field saying, you know, don't touch this, this is wrong, this is, you know, don't do anything. And then you got the other half of the field that's like, oh my gosh, Dominaria looks amazing, can't wait for it, I'm not going to spend any money on M25, I'm waiting for Dominaria. So
the thing is that I feel with Dominar or Masters 25, having a limited print run is perfect because it'll make people, once this initial kind of poo-poo dies down and people start seeing the cards that are actually there and the fact that they aren't able to get their hands on them easily as you may think, it'll bring the value up on certain cards and value down on others, so keeping the value at about the same. But making it so that they don't do a second print run and they keep with whatever they have right now is going to mean that it's not going to be completely bad. Now, because of the fact that there is a lot of negative press to it, I definitely see that Wizards did this leak themselves so that they can keep press positive, because ultimately, in the eyes of the company that owns them, if they get negative press, that's not good. That right. means their bottom line is affected, and they can't allow that to happen, especially after a set like Kamigawa in the past almost killing the entirety of the Magic community.
Right. And I mean, Wizards did an amazing job leading up to Iconic Masters of keeping everything under wraps such that they didn't even release spoilers. It was, guess what? Yeah. Here's HasCon. You're going to open the packs. And people were posting pictures of Mana Drain on Twitter going, oh my gosh, this is ridiculous. Oh wow, this is...
Yeah.
I mean, that was seriously... That was like an almost magical like set of hype right there.
Well, if you ask me, that's what they should have done with Masters and kept it a secret.
I think you're right. So there's a lot of layers here in terms of why they release preview cards. But we don't need to go into that right now. But all I'm saying is, you know, with this shortage of product run, you can't count on a second run. I mean, okay, so go back to Eternal Masters. They released Eternal Masters. Everyone was like, oh my God, get it now or it's gone. And they did, and then they thought everything was done. Then Christmas came, and they said, hey, guess what? We're going to send another print run out, and here's your Eternal Masters. And they were like, oh my God, I threw all this money at this thinking this was just going to boom in value, you know, and granted it's valuable, sure, but they said, okay, we're going to do another print run. Then you have Unstable. Unstable comes out and they're like, holy cow, this is insane. People love this. Yeah, we're going to go ahead and do another print run. And people were like waiting. And that print run never came. So you have both ends of the spectrum here where Wizards is ultimately just, they're feeling it out and they're saying, hey, you know, are they going to like this? Are they not? And I think that with the shortened print run, with all the bashing that's been done on social media, they really needed a way to kind of divert attention away from all the issues surrounding Masters 25. But
yeah,
but unfortunately, you know, maybe fortunately for them, people have stopped pre-ordering and stopped buying because they've sold enough. You know, they were like, we printed our M25. We've sold enough. We're done. Thanks. We're going to move on, you know, and like stop
maybe
complaining about it. You know, we're moving on. Anyway, just total and complete speculation.
So as we continue to speculate,
yes,
everybody is going to be talking about these cards from Dominaria.
Right.
I mean, it's kind of hard to get away from it. So spoilers, we are going to be talking about cards in this this thing.
Right, but not just any cards. We're going to be talking about cards that have a specific value towards the lore of original Dominaria. Now, granted, a lot of these will have, you know, significant value in, you know, events in the past, but we're picking ones that, you know, we're just specifically excited about knowing much about Magic's past.
Mm-hmm.
So
we're going to go in Wooburg order. So white, blue, black, red, green, multicolored, and then artifact, colorless first.
There you go. Yep.
Yeah. Sorry. I completely forgot about. So we're going to start with the card that we think is kind of awesome. Do you want to talk about it? You want me to talk about it?
Oh, I'll go ahead and take this one.
You want to talk this one?
Yeah. Okay. A lot of people were looking forward to seeing Karn from Dominaria, and here we have Karn, Scion of Urza. So instead of a exorbitantly costed Planeswalker, we have a 4-drop colorless Planeswalker with 5 loyalty that has a +1, reveal the top 2 cards of your library, and an opponent chooses one of them. Put that card into your hand. Exile the other with a silver counter on it. Minus mm-hmm. 1. Put a card you own with a silver counter on it from exile into your hand. And then minus 2. Create a 0/0 colorless construct artifact creature token with this creature gets +1/+1 for each artifact you control. So immediately it comes in as a 1/1. This is interesting. Very, very, very interesting, actually. So much so that it's a colorless Planeswalker that will draw you cards and mm-hmm. protect itself. That's everything you want out of a Planeswalker, and it's colorless. My God. I mean, what do you want to do when it first comes down? You already have protection. You have backup. Great. Reveal 2 cards. Put 1 in your hand. Don't worry. You'll put the other one in your hand next turn when you minus 1. Need some defense? Put out a 0/0 that it's probably going to be a 1/1. You have a couple other artifacts out. You could have like a 5/5 or a 3/3 or whatever. And you can do that multiple times before Karn actually dies. I think that this card is so incredibly versatile that you're going to be seeing this all over Standard. Possibly more.
I don't know.
Do you have anything you want to mention about this, Greg?
Nope. I think you hit every point I can ever think of.
Okay. All right. Well, then let's hit white.
I got a question to ask.
Yes.
What is the card that he feels most like that is of him?
Oh, well, I mean, I'm going to have to say that he actually mirrors more along the lines of his original printing as Karn Silver Golem because he doesn't directly attack other creatures. Mm-hmm. I mean, Karn Liberated was like the Hulk hulking out of his Phyrexian cage, and he's just ready to beat face, you know? But Karn is, in essence, supposed to be a pacifist for the most part. So the fact that he's drawing you cards and creating, you know, constructs or artifact creatures definitely harkens back to Karn's original mentality. So I think that it's just a win-win, both in functionality and in flavor.
Yeah. No, I agree completely.
Yeah. So. All right, Greg, take us into white here.
All right. So the first one I want to talk about in white is Lyra Dawnbringer. Dawnbringer is going to sound familiar because of Rhea Dawnbringer. So I can only imagine that this is an angel from the same flight. It is a legendary creature with flying, first strike, and lifelink. It is a 5-drop for 5/5 that gives other angels you control +1/+1 and lifelink. An angel lord, that's a legend. You know, I'm pretty sure angel players have been waiting for this. Heather Dawn specifically. I don't know if you follow her on Twitter or anything. But she is an angel person. And this just made me and reminded me of Rhea Dawnbringer, which was a 9 or 8 drop that returns a creature from your graveyard to the battlefield every turn.
Right. Right, and I mean,
it was so good.
This shares very similar stats with Baneslayer Angel, except it is a lord, an angel lord, and it gives them lifelink.
Yeah.
And if you're really itching to build that angel EDH deck, angel tribal, this seems like just a slam dunk home run. I mean, 5 is not too much to ask, so this definitely could also see some competitive standard play.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
What's that next card?
Next card we wanted to talk about was Triumph of Gerard. Now, Gerard Capuchin plays an immense role in the history of Dominaria. We don't have, obviously, time to go into that this episode, but we'll definitely go over the card, and not only the card, but the new mechanic on this card. So Triumph of Gerard is a 1 and a white for an enchantment Saga. So Saga is a new mechanic introduced in Dominaria. And the specific reminder text says, as this saga enters and after your draw step, add a lore counter, sacrifice after 3. They're referred to as chapters. So every time you place a lore counter on the permanent, this one being Triumph of Gerard, you would activate the ability of said chapter. So chapters 1 and 2. So for the first 2 lore counters, you put a +1/+1 counter on target creature you control with the greatest power. So it's a little limiting there, but still, for 2 mana, giving, you know, the 2/1/1 counters is great. So you put it out, you put the counter on, you put the +1/+1 counter. So then at the beginning of your next draw step, not upkeep, so if you have cards that say skip upkeep, the saga cards will still activate. So second chapter, you do the same thing. Then on the third turn it is out, you graduate to the third chapter, putting the ability on the stack of target creature you control with the greatest power gains flying, first strike, and lifelink until end of turn. So after you hit this third chapter and that ability resolves, you sacrifice the enchantment. I believe that is how it works. So I mean, I'm not 100% sure, but you can definitely do the same kind of counter manipulation as on the cumulative upkeep cards. So I'm curious to see here, if you were to put that third counter on, the third lore counter on here, if you have time to interact and remove counters with the ability on the stack to, in the reminder text, this does say sacrifice after 3. So maybe once that third counter hits, it will sacrifice itself. But you can definitely manipulate it before it hits that third counter. So cards like Solemnity will shut off all of these saga enchantments. Definitely a very interesting brand new take and a new mechanic brought forth on these enchantment saga cards. And Triumph of Gerard definitely references a humongous part in the lore of Magic's history in Dominaria. So
it does, yeah.
All right, so which card do we have next?
So moving on to the next card in white, will be the last one, is Fall of the Thran. If you don't know this, Thran are the creators of the Power Stones and the artifacts of Dominaria. They are the reason why Dominaria is such a hub of mana. All of their stuff was all focused on colorless mana, so they weren't using the colors of magic, which is where Joda came in and helped design it so the Thran... that they started using the colors of magic for everything instead of just colorless.
Right, and just to echo what you're saying, Greg, if you've seen the card Worn Power Stone, I mean, these are Power Stones that are prevalent on Thran, and they do provide that colorless mana just to reinforce the lore behind what you're saying. Yeah, so go ahead.
All right, so it is a 5 colorless and a white enchantment saga. On the first saga, so when it enters the battlefield, it destroys all lands.
Boom!
Yeah. Then on chapters 2 and 3, it says each player returns 2 land cards from their graveyard to the battlefield.
Each player. Okay.
So, yeah. So it means it's an enchantment that you don't want to die, but if you really want to be rude, you could get rid of this. Or proliferate the counters.
Yeah.
So.
Maybe you want to run this in an EDH deck with Terra Eternal.
Maybe.
Terra Eternal, of course, is a card from Worldwake, an enchantment that says all lands you control are indestructible, and then you just throw a couple extra lands in your yard, and that just gives you insane land advantage over your opponent.
I mean, Kamal does the same thing.
Sure. So, all right.
So, continuing on.
We're moving into blue here. So we see, Masters 25 started this, and Dominaria is definitely continuing the trend. We have a legendary creature that is an uncommon. We have Tetsuko Umezawa Fugitive. Yes, that's the same pronunciation as on Umezawa's Jite. For 1 and a blue, you get a 1/3 human rogue legendary creature. Creatures you control with power or toughness, 1 or less, can't be blocked. Guess what? That ball lightning you just dropped, can't be blocked. That, Master
what about the 3/1s from Rakamar?
Dude, that Master of Cruelties from Dragon's Maze can't be blocked. It just gets dumb. That's crazy. So, Greg, you wanted to touch on the history behind the Umezawa.
I sure did.
Yeah.
So we really start with Tetsuo Umezawa back in Chronicles, which was a Grixis-colored legendary creature that allowed you to destroy creatures.
Yes.
It was pretty cool. And then we go to Toshiro Umezawa in the Kamigawa block from Betrayers that allowed you to play spells out of your graveyard. Also was the person that killed Nicol Bolas's body.
Interesting.
While he was in the spirit world. So the Umezawa family, as we can tell now, had a Planeswalker in their ranks at some point, because I don't know how there can be Umezawas on 2 different planes.
Yes, that's a very interesting conundrum. Can't wait to see how they explain that one.
Well, I'm more interested to see if this Umezawa has any relevance to dealing with Bolas, or if it's the reason why Bolas is there. Maybe Bolas just has, a pure hatred for the Umezawa clan, and he's deciding to go there just to kill them all.
It could be. And, the story for Dominaria starts next week, which we will be covering for you.
I'm so excited.
As we do here on The Win Condition. All right, Greg, go on. Take us to our next card here.
The next card we were looking at was the Mirari Conjection.
Conjecture.
Which, if you guys know what the Mirari is a 5-drop legendary artifact that says whenever you cast an instant or sorcery, you may pay 2 additional to copy it. It's pretty good.
Yeah.
So this is a 4 generic and blue enchantment saga. In the first chapter, it returns target instant card from your graveyard to your hand. In the second chapter, it returns target sorcery card from your graveyard to your hand. But in the third chapter is where it gets really fun. Until end of turn, whenever you cast an instant or sorcery spell, copy it. You may choose new targets for the copy.
Oh, so a one-turn swarm intelligence?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Wow. That sounds pretty good.
It does sound like fun. I'm excited to play with a card like this, really.
Now, let's not forget, these counters are manipulatable with things like proliferate. So if you wanted to jump ahead to that third chapter in your Atraxa deck, you know, that would definitely make things a whole heck of a lot easier for you.
Oh, yeah, it would.
However, with Atraxa, you do proliferate at end of turn, so that would kind of put you in a corner here. But anyway.
Well, you'd never get your sorcery back, but you could proliferate, and then at the beginning of your next turn, you'd be in the third.
That's true. You chapter. Play it, you proliferate that turn, and then the next turn, you're on chapter three, and boom. Yep. Yep. Very true. Good call. Good call. All right. So, yeah, Mirari, definitely another huge part in the lore of Magic. The last blue card we wanted to talk about, Sentinel of the Pearl Trident. So for four and a blue, you get a 3/3 creature merfolk soldier, uncommon, with flash. That's already pretty good. When Sentinel of the Pearl Trident enters the battlefield, you may exile target historic permanent you control. If you do, return that card to the battlefield under its owner's control at the beginning of the next end step. So just to clarify, the historic marker of a card, or what makes a card historic, is if it is a saga card, if it is an artifact, or if it is a legendary card. Any one of those three will satisfy the historic requirement. So, more so what we wanted to touch on with this is the fact that the Pearl Trident is a very dominant tribe of merfolk within Dominaria. We've seen Master of the Pearl Trident earlier.
Sentinel.
Yep, Sentinel now. And so, and Merfolk, with the printing of Merfolk in Ixalan and Rivals of Ixalan, we may be able, even though this is a 5-drop, you know, we may actually be able to see some more powerful Merfolk adding to the mix, maybe creating a competitive Merfolk deck within Standard.
Oh, man.
Only hope. So,
Standard fish is a thing? I don't know. Maybe I don't want to play.
Well, we're going on and we're moving to darker times. We're going to hit the black side of things here. We only had a couple cards here in black we wanted to talk about. So,
yeah.
Greg, why don't you let us know what our first black card is?
Once again, it's another saga. This is Chainer's Torment. If you did not know, there's Chainer Dementia Master, which allows you to take control of creatures in your opponent's graveyards and make them your own nightmares.
Ooh, gross.
Yeah, yeah. So this one has, in chapters 1 and 2, it deals 2 damage to each opponent and you gain 2 life. In chapter 3, though, you create an XX Black Nightmare Horror Creature Token, where X is half your life total, rounded up. Then it deals X damage to you. It's pretty good. I'm excited for this, but the fact that it does half your life hurts. But this is definitely a lot like Chainer, where you had to pay 3 life to reanimate. So
yeah, very interesting. Yeah, and there's been a lot of talk recently with the Surge of Pauper about the popularity of Chainer's Edict. And Chainer definitely playing a part. Maybe we can cover Chainer in one of our later stories once we clear the slate of all the Dominaria stories.
But Kamal,
there's just
and Radha.
There's so many compelling characters in the multiverse. I don't think we'll ever run out of interesting lore stories to talk about here on the Win Condition. So the other black card that we really only wanted to talk about was Rat Colony. For 1 and a black, you get a 2/1 uncommon creature, Rat. Rat Colony gets +1/+0 for each other rat you control. That's it. That's all.
What? Nothing, no, that's
nothing
not
special.
It. Come
oh,
on,
wait.
Read the next line.
That's right. A deck can have any number of cards named Rat Colony. What is going on? There's a new, like, rat-focused mechanic that is, you know, you may include any number of these in your deck. You know, Shadowborn Apostle has just been errated to be a rat. No, I'm kidding. Rat Colony is not going to really synergize that well. I mean, I'm sorry, Relentless Rats won't necessarily synergize well with your Rat Colonies. However, Rat Colony is cheaper, and the power is definitely there. I mean, we were just talking about that blue enchantment that let creatures with toughness 1 get unblocked. So if you have rat colonies plus this other, let me look at what was the name of that enchantment.
That was a creature.
It was Tetsuko. If you get Tetsuko, Umezawa, and rat colonies, I mean, holy cow, you're barging in with a whole bunch of unblockable rats that just get incrementally bigger. That seems
Gosh. It seems kind of good.
It's kind of an infestation. That's pretty nasty.
So what card does this remind you of that's not Relentless Rats?
What card does this remind me of that's not Relentless Rats? You got me. What does it remind
if
you
I
of?
I remember correctly, it was Plague Rats.
That's right. Plague Rats have... They're star, right? Where star is the number of rats you control?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so rats, baby, rats.
Let me double check that. Yeah. No, that's number of creatures named Plague Rats. There's another one that does it based only on rats.
Oh, Plague Rats, not just rats, period. Okay. Well,
anyhow, there's a lot of sweet, sweet cards that this just kind of harkens back to. So.
Well, rats. Darn it. Oh, well. All right. So, Greg, why don't you bring us on into red? It's a very, very exciting inclusion here. Who might we be talking about?
I don't know. I think we talked about him previously. Karn tumbled with him a couple times on the Weatherlight. It is Squee the Immortal. he's going to be a 1 generic red. You know why he got immortal status, right?
No, why?
Vorath thought he was a fun little play toy.
Not that
kind of play toy. So he gave him immortality so he could continue killing him over and over again because he was so much fun to kill.
Good night. All right, yeah, Volrath, another guy we need to touch on here. But anyway, go ahead, Squee the Immortal.
Wait, that might have been Krovax. Is one of those two.
Okay.
But he's a 2/1 legendary creature goblin. The original Squee would return to your hand from your graveyard after it dies. This one, on the other hand, allows you to cast it from either your graveyard or your exile.
Wow. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So pretty much this guy can never really, really die. And any way they want to try to get rid of it, well, it'll still get there. I mean, even if you Wolverine Ring this guy, he comes back.
Yeah, no, that's a pretty powerful card. I mean, in terms of Commander, you're really never going to have to pay Commander tax on this guy. Because one way or another, you're just going to be able to cast him for his original casting cost. So,
yeah,
that's pretty exciting. All right, moving right along. Next red card we wanted to talk about, Gitu Lavamancer. For 1 red, you get a 1/2 human wizard. As long as there are 2 or more instant and or sorcery cards in your graveyard, Gitu Lava Runner gets... Wait, Lavamancer? Lava Runner? This is weird. In Mythic spoiler here, we're seeing 2 different names on this card, so... Don't know exactly...
It's one of those.
Don't know exactly which one is correct, but... Anyway, let me restart. As long as there are 2 or more instant and or sorcery cards in your graveyard, Gitu Lava Runner gets +1/+0, and has haste. So for 1 mana, you're getting a 2/2 haste, but it is definitely conditional. You're going to have to work for it a little bit. So this could be a turn 2 play if you're, you know, dropping your 1 drop on turn 1, another 1 drop on turn 2, and then you play this guy and swing in for some hasty damage. Could be pretty good, but definitely conditional. Kind of have to work for it. We were thinking along the lines of the name Gitu Lavamancer, sort of being akin to Grim Lavamancer, which also had 2 cards in the graveyard matter. Of course, he would then do 2 damage to target creature or player, which is a little bit better in most situations. But anyway, definitely a very interesting card, which we'll probably see pop up on a competitive level in Standard, possibly Modern, but who's to say? Anyway,
I don't know.
What
we'll
do we got
see.
Next?
Next, we go to Varric's Bladewing, which is among the descendants of Rorik's Bladewing, which we saw in Onslaught, and a predecessor to Terok's Bladewing, which we saw in Future Sight. It is a 4/4/4 legendary creature dragon with a kicker of 3. It has flying, of course, it's a dragon. And when it enters the battlefield, if it was kicked... So if you paid 7 for this, not only do you get Varric's Bladewing, you get Karok's Bladewing, which is a 4/4 red dragon with flying. So pay 7 and get 2 4/4 flying dragons.
That's not bad. That's not
it's
bad
pretty
at
good.
All. Yeah. And
pretty good.
This, along with like Stang being printed in M25, Wizards is kind of finally getting to a point where some of these tokens are not going to be abusable with cards like Anointed Procession, Doubling Season, Parallel Lives by making the token legendary, which means if it were to get doubled, you wouldn't just get one, you'd get none. Because, or actually, no, when you get to choose
you
one of the legendaries to keep. My mistake.
Yeah. You're thinking of the old rule, but you know what card negates that?
What?
Mirror Gallery.
That's right, and that's not to say that if you have a Warstorm Surge out in play, you won't be able to do that damage before those creatures have to get sacrificed.
Oof.
I mean, they are entering the battlefield,
so
watch out. All right, well, this is actually going to bring us to our next Planeswalker. We talked about her last week. And now we have Jaya Ballard. For 2 red, you get a legendary Planeswalker Jaya for with 5 loyalty. Her +1, add red to your mana pool. Oh, that's right. That's another change they're making. There's some wording changes to these new cards, one of which is they're eliminating the phrase mana pool. They're just saying add whatever color of mana. So add red. Spend this mana only to cast instant or sorcery spells. So slightly limiting, but in red deck, you're not going to have a shortage of instants or sorceries.
You cast a Chaos Warp off of this.
There you go. +1. Discard up to 3 cards, then draw that many cards. Seems pretty good. Seems like it would be great in a Madness deck. We're getting a lot of fuel. There's got to be someone out there that's going to be able to make a Madness deck that actually works and is competitive. Now, I know she's a 5-drop Planeswalker, but
still. I don't know. What about this Hollow One?
Hollow One goes out for free on Jaya's second +1. That's a good point. And they will both be legal and standard. But a 4-4 on turn 5 is a lot less exciting than a 4-4 on turn 1.
Yeah, but you get it with a Planeswalker.
You do. So, and plus it's standard, not modern. So, there you go.
Yeah.
And then her ultimate, which is -8, so 3 turns away, you get an emblem with, you may cast instant and sorcery cards from your graveyard. If a card cast this way would be put into your graveyard, exile it instead. So, a little Yawgmoth's Will for cards in your graveyard.
In red.
This leads me to be very curious and interested in terms of the flavor of this. You know, like they said that she'd cleanse the presence of Marisil and Limduel, you know, completely. But this definitely mirrors a card like, you know, Yawgmoth's Will. I mean, but they you could play creatures and stuff. And we also have Past and Flames in red, too. But I don't know. I can kind of hope for twists and turns within the story. But still, that's a very, very, very powerful ability.
It is. You're right.
And she's already there if you're using Doubling Season. She can hit her ultimate the turn she comes out. So that's something to consider. But, yep, there you go. You've got Jaya Ballard. Absolutely. Okay. All right. So let's bring it back to non-Planeswalker cards here, and let's dive into green.
Okay. So we're going to start off green with another Saga card. This is an uncommon. I find that the uncommons are more flavorful than the rares. Talk about a weird thing, right?
Right.
So this is Song of Frailes. It is in chapters 1 and 2. Until your next turn, creatures you control gain tap, add 1 mana of any color. Yes, you read that right. It is Cryptolith right on chapters 1 and 2. It is a 2-drop. When you hit chapter 3, put a 1-1 counter on each creature you control. Those creatures gain vigilance, trample, and indestructible until end of turn.
Wow. This just seems to go right alongside Winding Constrictor while it's still legal and standard. I mean, you can then tap your Constrictor for mana, and when it pops, you get to put 2 1-1 counters on each creature you control. That just seems absolutely
especially
wonderful.
When you run something like Rishkar with this card.
Oh,
man.
Yeah, Rishkar.
So much good.
And this are like best buddies. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So That's awesome. And Freylis, of course, we've referenced in a couple of stories here, an incredibly powerful planeswalker, as well as having her likeness in one of the commander products, one of the few planeswalkers you may use as your general. Just an all-around extremely strong card.
Yeah.
Also featured in last year's Commander Anthologies product. So there you go. And then next is actually not so much for flavor, but more so a nod to the power creep that we've seen over the course of the 25 years that Magic has been around. We see a card called Steel Leaf Champion for green, green, green. That's three mana, three green. You get a 5/4 Elf Knight. Sounds good enough, right?
But it's there's more.
Steel Leaf Champion can't be blocked by creatures with power 2 or less. Okay.
Wow.
Let's take a trip down memory lane here and compare this to a pretty well-known card from Magic's early history called Crawworm. Okay? Crawworm was a 6/4 vanilla creature with just one more power for 4 and 2 green. So 6 total mana. And that was that was way back from Alpha. So here we are in Dominaria returning. So you get for one less power, 5/4. It's only three mana, half as much, and it has this is crazy. I think that
Another card that comes to mind is back in Zendikar, World Wake. We had Leatherback Baloth, which was a green, green, green for a 4/5 vanilla.
Yep.
Yeah. And now we're getting here again at the uncommon level, a 5/4 with evasion.
Right.
So, yeah, Magic's kind of changing.
And you go back a little further than that, you get the Shards of Alara block. You had Woolly Thoktar, which is a 5/4 for 3, but it was 3 different colors of mana. And it was vanilla. This is insane. Like, this card is so good. I can definitely see a Steel Leaf Champion being played in Standard. You know, I think that would definitely be a possibility. All right, what's our next card?
Moving
in green?
On. The next card is Multani Yavimai's Avatar. It's a 4 generic green green for a 0/0 legendary creature elemental avatar. It has reach and trample, and gets +1/+1 for each land you control and each land card in your graveyard. And as an ability, pay 2, so a generic and green, return 2 lands you control to their owner's hand, return Multani from your graveyard to your hand.
Ooh, that's pretty powerful.
This goes back to Multani, the original one that had Shroud and had power and toughness equal to the number of cards in players' hands. They're both very good. Multani trained with Raphelos and Jerrod.
Yes. Yes. God.
Yeah, so it's so cool to see this guy coming back, honestly. I'm excited.
There's so much potential for storyline here coming forward, and I just can't wait.
There really is.
Cannot wait to see what happens here. All right, so next one we'll touch on here is Sylvan Awakening. For 2 and a green, you get a sorcery, an uncommon, that says until your next turn, all lands you control become 2/2 elemental creatures with reach, indestructible, and haste. They are still lands. Wow. So this.
Did you hear Indestructible?
I did. You could pair this up with that previous White Saga card that destroys all lands, and you come out way ahead of your opponents.
Mm-hmm.
And this, that's just huge. I mean, and Sylvan plays such a huge part in the quality of cards and the lore and history. I mean, you've got your Sylvan Library, your Sylvan Advocate, you've got
Sylvan Safekeeper.
Sylvan Safekeeper, Sylvan Scrying. It's super, super flavorful and
it really is. Yeah.
Very powerful within Dominaria. All right. We got to keep moving here. We're really going.
All right. So
here.
Moving on to my favorite, legendary creature, we've got Kamal's Druidic Vow. It is a legendary sorcery. It is an X green, green. So legendary sorcery is a new type of spell. And it means you can only cast this spell while you have a legendary creature or planeswalker on the board. Pretty sweet. What this says is look at the top X cards of your library. You may put any number of land and or legendary permanent cards with Karina mana cost X or less from among them onto the battlefield and put the rest into your graveyard. So it's Gen Wave for legendaries, really.
But, yeah, and you only get one permanent, but... it does cost a little bit less. And
no, any number of land and or legendary permanents.
Oh, any number. I am sorry. You are absolutely correct. Yep.
This card is just busted.
That is ridiculous. I mean, if you're playing in Commander, you're going to have your legendary creature out, and this is just going to be, it's just going to be butta.
Yes.
The next one we have, I think you would probably be better talk about that one. I'm going to skip one ahead, and I'm going to talk about Jota, Archmage Eternal. For one, a red, a white, and a blue, you get a 4/3 flying legendary human wizard. You may pay Wooburg rather than pay the mana cost for spells that you cast. So obviously Wooburg is white, blue, black, red, green. He's a Fist of the Suns on a 4/3 flash creature. Or sorry, flying, not flash.
Yeah.
So you have a new five-color commander. I mean, his casting cost is Jeskai, but the fact that he has Wooburg in his text box makes him a five-color commander. So this is exciting. This is going to make a lot of cards come down really easily. I could see some seriously busted Jota decks coming out in the near future.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, we went over his story today, Archmage Eternal. The fact that he is red, white, and blue is definitely telling of the fact that he is good. You know, he means well. The red definitely will touch on his insanity. You know, the white, you know, he is good. He has, you know, encountered the Fountain of Youth, obviously. And blue, he is wise beyond his years. He's super old, super powerful. A really, really good, flavorful card with a lot of rich history behind it. And I really hope we get more cards involving Jota as the set continues to be released.
Okay, so continuing on the card that you jumped across, we have Shauna, Sisse's Legacy. So as we know, the Weatherlight was a part of the Legacy program by Urza, and of course it continues on. Shauna is nowhere like close to as good as Captain Sisse, but she is a 0/0 for a green and a white legendary creature human warrior, and it cannot be the target of spells of abilities your opponents control. Spells can target her, but not abilities, so it's not full hexproof. And she gets +1/+1 for each creature you control. This is actually a lot like Voice of Resurgence.
Yes.
Except it does not turn into a copy of itself when it dies.
Right.
But it is still great. Seeing that the people from the Weatherlight are still alive, I'm excited.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What does that bring us to?
Well, that'll actually bring us to Joyra, Weatherlight Captain. For 2, a blue and a red, you get a 3/3 legendary human artificer. Whenever you cast a historic spell, draw a card. Now, I was initially looking at this going, okay, well, I mean, that's sort of eh, meh, whatever. But then I realized artifacts were historic spells. And then I was like, wait a second. Any artifact you cast when she's out, you get to draw a card. We've seen this effect in green with creatures. I mean, it's been there before, but my God, I mean, artifacts are already broken by nature, and they're cheap. So the fact that you can actually build a deck where you can play out all these ridiculously powerful artifacts while drawing cards and refilling your hand just makes this the potential for Joyra to become absolutely busted and broken. Maybe not as bad and degenerate as her original iteration, but my goodness, I could definitely see there being some combo decks going around here.
All right.
Pretty busted. So
I got to bring something up here. This is something that I think is kind of interesting. Do you notice that she is called the Weatherlight Captain?
Yes.
We know that the Weatherlight crashed into the Predator and was destroyed.
Was it?
Yes. So this means that somebody either recreated the Weatherlight or rebuilt it.
Yep. Yep.
So we can discern that Jaya, Jace, Gideon, Joyra, probably Shauna, and Squee are all on the Weatherlight when we start the next story.
My gosh. This is going to
get...
Yeah. All right. Well, what's power through here? What's our next multicolored creature, Greg?
Our next multicolored creature is going to be Darigaz, Reincarnated. So if you did not know, Darigaz dove into an active volcano, killing himself, terminating. I can't remember why he did that. Maybe we'll have to look that up in the lore.
Ooh, maybe.
So he is a 7/7 legendary creature dragon for 4 and black, red, green. Flying Trample Haste. If he would die, instead exile it with 3 egg counters on it. At the beginning of your upkeep, if Darigaz is exiled with an egg counter on it, remove an egg counter from it. Then if Darigaz has no egg counters on it, return it to the battlefield. So this is kind of a different take on fading or vanishing, but or time counters or suspend even, but they're using egg counters. So essentially, Darigaz has become like a phoenix.
True. And I was thinking about it, and unfortunately, I don't think Solemnity would affect this because you actually exile Darigaz with the counters on it. And I believe Solemnity says you cannot place counters on players or permanents you control.
Right.
Darn it. Oh, well.
All right. So we're getting a little long here.
Yeah, we are. We're gonna power through, though. Our last Planeswalker that we're going to talk about. Actually, Greg, do you want to take this one?
I mean, I would love to talk about Teferi, the Savior of Dominaria.
Or Terrell Owens, as we like to call him, based on the art that we've seen. Anyway,
so he is Teferi, Hero of Dominaria, 3 generic, blue and a white, legendary Planeswalker Teferi. He comes in with 4 loyalty counters. He has a +1 to draw a card, and at the beginning of the next end step, untap 2 lands. Yeah, you gotta have that counter magic up, right?
Yep.
Then at a -3, put target non-land permanent into its owner's hand, library, 3rd from the top.
Little commit almost there.
Yep. And then -8, you get an emblem that says, whenever you draw a card, exile target permanent it an opponent controls.
Wait, what?
What? Excuse- I didn't say anything.
Whenever you draw a card, exile target permanent an opponent can...
I mean, he just wants to phase your stuff out.
No, that's not even phasing. That's like, it's gone. I mean, and it's a.
Squee comes back.
It's okay, sure, and so does your Eternal Scourge, your Mist Hollow Griffin, et cetera, et cetera. But 4 loyalty, you know, doubles to 8, which is the ultimate, and so that's just, you know, you drop him. You windfall. You get to exile 7 permanents. Dude, that's too much.
All right, so we got 4 more cards we wanted to talk about.
Right.
5 kind of.
New cards, yeah.
New cards. You going ahead?
So Mishra's Self-Replicator is the first artifact I want to talk about. So 5 mana, you get a 2/2 assembly worker. Whenever you cast a historic spell, artifacts, legendaries, and sagas, you may pay 1. If you do, create a token that's a copy of Mishra's Self-Replicator. So you're going to get some exponential growth here if you find some cheap legendary, some cheap historic cards that you can play. And this will harken back to Mishra's Factory, which was a land that you could pay to turn into a 2/2 assembly worker. So again, we have Mishra, we have the assembly worker, we have 1 mana activation. It is 5 to cast, so that is kind of costly, but once you put it out, it can start to get, you know, you can start to spread that out pretty easily, pretty quickly. All right, what you got next?
Yeah. Blackblade Reforged. We know this card from Dakin Blackblade and Korlosh, Heir to Blackblade. Is a 2-drop legendary artifact equipment. Equipped creature gets +1/+1 for each land that you control. Now, this has a special equip of equip legendary creature for 3 or equip any creature for 7. It is very cool. It's exciting because it does, it interacts a lot differently than anything else we've really seen. Mm-hmm. But just because of how it works, it's cool.
Yeah. Any way that you can mitigate that equip cost, like Pure Steel Paladin, or I think there's a core creature that you can drop that can supplicate
Stoneforge Mystic?
Well, that, but there's
Stone Hero Giant.
Something like that, yeah. Yeah. But anyway, yeah, no, this definitely is a reference to Dakin Blackblade, which had power and toughness equal to the number of lands you control.
Yeah.
Very good. Very, very good rich history in this card here. All right, so moving on. The next one we wanted to talk about was Mox. Yes, Mox Amber. So for zero, you get a legendary artifact that says tap, add one mana of any color among legendary creatures and planeswalkers you control. So a lot more prohibitive than the other Moxes that we had. This isn't going to allow you to sort of go nuts on turn one, you know, unless you find some ridiculous way to sneak attack something out. I don't know. But it's a Mox that seems pretty neutered. But can be very powerful later on in the game. It is a zero-drop artifact that will add mana, so that side of it is very exciting, but definitely not going to be as powerful as the other Moxes we've seen in history.
I don't know. Even some of those other ones are still worth a lot.
Yeah. All right, Greg, what's the last artifact we wanted to talk about? This is a big one.
Helm of the Host. This is a four-drop legendary artifact. Equipment with a clip of five. And, this is kind of like Sting, honestly. Matter of fact, I'm pretty sure it's Sting's helmet.
Ooh.
It says, at the beginning of combat on your turn, create a token that's a copy of equipped creature. Except the token isn't legendary. If equipped creature is legendary,
right,
that token gains haste.
Yep.
So this allows you to get a copy of your legendary creature out as a non-legend, and it doesn't die at the end of turn.
Right. Right. So, we were talking about this a little earlier. Greg, you had mentioned you wanted this in your Silvala deck.
Yeah.
The dirty, dirty shenanigans that you can do. Now, a couple of things to note here. The token does have haste. So, if you have that mana-producing, you know, commander or legendary creature, you can produce a ton of mana. Let alone, if you're running anything like Parallel Lives, Anointed Procession, Doubling Season, you're going to get multiple copies of that creature. Now, let's also touch on the fact that it says at the beginning of combat on your turn. So if you have multiple attack steps and multiple combat phases, you're going to get even more tokens. So the potential for this to get out of control busted, considering we like to do those kinds of things in EDH and Commander, makes this a very, very exciting card to build.
It is.
So I cannot wait to see what people do with this. It's super duper exciting, but that's gonna round it out for us for the new cards that we wanted to talk about. But there was something else that we wanted to mention, Greg, and what was that?
Well, we're getting a really cool reprint of a one cost mana dork.
Wait, no, Wizards doesn't want to do that anymore, right?
I know, right? It is not Birds of Paradise.
Oh.
Sorry. But it is Llanowar Elves.
They're reprinting Llanowar Elves?
Yep, they're going to return.
I mean, not only is it a one-mana mana dork, but it's got that sort of contradictory name where it's Llanowar Elves with one creature. I mean, what are they thinking?
I don't know what they're thinking. They could have printed Elvish Visionary, or not Visionary? Mystic.
Mystic, anything like that. But still, Dominaria, Llanowar Elves is quite iconic.
Yeah.
I think that this is going to enable a lot of fun decks in Standard. This is the fact that this is going to be in Standard is amazing. Again, I cannot wait to see what kind of decks.
Kind of dino decks we're going to get.
Yeah, the dino decks are going to be absolutely dumb.
Yeah.
All right. Well, now that we've talked your ear off about spoilers that were leaked for Dominaria, we wanted to take a little bit of time. There haven't been many new decks that we've seen, but there were a couple that popped up on TCG Player. So real quick, and I mean real quick, we're going to jump on over to the Brewmaster's Lair. So under the latest 20 standard decks, we see a new one called Jeskai Tokens. So this is very exciting. I'm just going to, you know, quickly run through here. you're running creatures that produce tokens like Tilinali Summoner. That's exciting. You've got your Oketra the True. Mm-hmm. You've got your Aven Wind Guide, which makes your tokens have flying and vigilance, and you can embalm the Aven Wind Guide as well, which comes in as a token. You're running that Anoiter Priest, which can embalm as well, but it also gives you the life when your creatures enter. Just good stuff like Rekindling Phoenix and Glorybringer. But then it's running four of your favorite card in the world, Greg, Anointed Procession. then you've got your Oketra's Monument, which will pump out even more tokens. Legion's Landing, pumping out even more tokens. And then if you look down into the sideboard, they're running the Locust God, even more tokens. Jace, Cunning Castaway, even more tokens.
Yeah.
That's amazing. With Anointed Procession, like, wow. This deck looks like a whole lot of fun.
It so, does. That sounds like a lot of fun. Maybe I should try it out.
Yeah, if you get a chance, definitely check out this Jeskai tokens build. And it's running, you know, Settle the Wreckage, Fumigate, Cast Out, a little bit of removal to kind of try to keep your opponents honest. And then I think, where we got here? And then you go jump down to the Modern section. They've got a Mardu Humans deck. And I was just excited to see this because it is running four of Abbot of Carol Keep, which I think is a powerful card that needs, you know, some time to come into its own. It's also running Alesha, who smiles at death. But then you've got your Champion of the Parish, your Kite Sail Freebooter, Thalia, Guardian of Thraben, Thalia's Lieutenant, Sin Collector. And then you've also got Falconroth Aristocrat. And in a deck full of humans, you can pump this aristocrat up considerably well, considering the fact that you can also make it indestructible when you sacrifice creatures to it. And if you're sacrificing a whole bunch of humans, it'll get those +1/+1 counters, which is a gigantic finisher. Plus, it has evasion and flying, which make it particularly nasty.
It really does.
Soren Solemn Visitor, the Lone Planeswalker. And then you've got your removal, your lightning bolts, your paths, your Inquisition of Kozilek. No Fatal Push, surprisingly. Oh, there are two in the sideboard. Okay.
Boom. Yeah. There's your push.
That's exciting.
300 is still alive.
Yes. Slaughter Games in the sideboard. Ew. That card is so good. I love that guy. Cannot be countered by spells or abilities. I'm sorry. Let's just read it. Two, black, red. Slaughter Games can't be countered by spells or abilities. Name a non-land card, any card you want. Search target opponent's graveyard, hand, and library for any number of cards with the card name and exile them. Then that player shuffles your library. That's just... ugh.
This really allows them to get rid of a lot of the boogeyman of modern, so...
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So, so yeah. Very strong. Okay, so real quick, Bruce segment. That's pretty much all we wanted to talk about. Those were kind of the newest looking decks that were a little different that stood out to us. So there you go. Another reminder, we are in the midst of a giveaway. This is episode 48. We will be announcing our winners on episode 50. Greg, what do they have to do to enter into this contest?
Well, all you got to do is email us at thewincondition@gmail.com with your most favorite win condition. Now, this can be either Legacy, Vintage, Standard, Modern, any type of format, including EDH. Even if you wanted to talk to us about this epic debt to the debt list that you killed somebody in Two-Headed Giant.
There you go.
Tell us your favorite win condition that you liked. What we're going to do is we're going to judge them. We're going to talk about them on episode 50. And, of course, we're going to choose 3 to 5 of you. Then you're going to contact us and say, this is the card I want from that Forged in Stone deck.
Yep.
From Commander 14.
And might I say, we have quite the range of descriptions, ranging from straight up power beatdown to literally insane. So But send us in your craziest / best / favorite win conditions that you've had in a game, and we would love to share that with you all, our listeners. So, all right. Well, let's also remind everybody once again that this show is brought to you by Flipside Gaming at flipsidegaming.com. You can head over there and pre-order yourself a box of Dominaria. And be sure to use that promo code WINCONDITION in orders over $10. That'll help you out by saving you 10% off your purchase and help us by contributing to future show giveaways. Because we love doing giveaways, and we will continue doing them as long as we possibly can. All right. Well, Greg, where can these fine folk find you?
Well, you can, of course, find me at our conjoined email. But you can also find me on Twitter at NoobSlasher2003.
Yep, you can find me at MTG_Sean. The show is at The Win Condition, all on Twitter. And yeah, you can email us, like Greg said before, the Win Condition Podcast at gmail.com. And yeah, we love hearing from you guys. Thanks again so much for the email. Even if we don't get back to you immediately, we do appreciate it. We do read everything, and we will give back to you guys hopefully on episode 50. So, all that being said, Greg, thanks again.
Thank you.
And we will talk to y'all next week.
Y'all, great evening, okay?